succeeded in lighting the lamp, and came in to see the man that he thought had been killed. And as Sancho caught sight of him at the door, seeing him coming in his shirt with a cloth on his head and a lamp in his hand, and a very forbidding countenance, he said to his master, "Señor, can it be that this is the enchanted Moor coming back to give us more castigation, if there be anything still left in the ink-bottle?"
"It cannot be the Moor," answered Don Quixote, "for those under enchantment do not let themselves be seen by anyone."
"If they don't let themselves be seen, they let themselves be felt," said Sancho. "If not, let my shoulders speak to the point."
"Mine could speak too," said Don Quixote, "but that is not a sufficient reason for believing that what we see is the enchanted Moor."
The officer came up, and finding them engaged in such a peaceful conversation, stood amazed. Though Don Quixote, to be sure, still lay on his back, unable to move from pure pummeling and plasters, the officer turned to him and said,
"Well, how goes it, good man?"
"I would speak more politely if I were you," replied Don Quixote. "Is it the way of this country to address knights-errant in that style, you booby?"
The officer, finding himself so disrespectfully treated by such a sorry-looking individual, lost his temper, and raising the lamp full of oil, smote Don Quixote such a blow with it on the head that he gave him a badly broken pate. Then, all being in darkness, he went out, and Sancho Panza said,
"That is certainly the enchanted Moor, señor, and he keeps the treasure for others, and for us only the cuffs and lamp-wax."
"That is the truth," answered Don Quixote, "and there is no use in troubling oneself about these matters of enchantment, or being angry or vexed at them, for as they are invisible and visionary, we shall find no one on whom to avenge ourselves, do what we may. Rise, Sancho, if thou canst, and call the guardian of this fortress, and get him to give me a little oil, wine, salt, and rosemary, to make the restorative balsam, for indeed I believe I have great need of it now, because I am losing much blood from the wound that phantom gave me."
Sancho got up with pain enough in his bones, and went after the innkeeper in the dark, and meeting the officer, who was looking to see what had become of his enemy, he said to him,
"Señor, whoever you are, do us the favour and kindness to give us a little rosemary, oil, salt, and wine, for it is wanted to cure one of the best knights-errant on earth, who lies on yonder bed, wounded by the hands of the enchanted Moor that is in this inn."
When the officer heard him talk in this way, he took him for a man out of his senses, and as day was now beginning to break, he opened the inn gate, and calling the host, he told him what this good man wanted. The host furnished him with what he required, and Sancho brought it to Don Quixote, who, with his hand to his head, was bewailing the pain of the blow of the lamp, which had done him no more harm than raising a couple of rather large lumps, and what he fancied blood was only the sweat that flowed from him in his sufferings during the late storm. To be brief, he took the materials, of which he made a compound, mixing them all and boiling them a good while, until it seemed to him that they had come to perfection. He then asked for some phial to pour it into, and as there was not one in the inn, he decided on putting it into a tin oil bottle or flask, of which the host made him a free gift. And over the flask he repeated more than 80 paternosters, and as many more Ave Marias, Salves, and Credos, accompanying each word with a cross by way of benediction, at all which there were present Sancho, the innkeeper, and the officer, for the carrier was now peacefully engaged in attending to the comfort of his mules. This being accomplished, he felt anxious to make trial himself, on the spot, of the virtue of this precious balsam, as he considered it. And so he drank near a quart of what could not be put into the flask and remained in the pigskin in which it had been boiled. But scarcely had he done drinking, when he began to vomit in such a way that nothing was left in his stomach, and with the pangs and spasms of vomiting he broke into a profuse sweat, on account of which he bade them cover him up and leave him alone. They did so, and he lay sleeping more than 3 hours, at the end of which he awoke, and felt very great bodily relief, and so much ease from his bruises, that he thought himself quite cured, and verily believed he had hit upon the balsam of Fierabras, and that, with this remedy, he might thenceforward, without any fear, face any kind of destruction, battle, or combat, however perilous it might be. Sancho Panza, who also regarded the amendment of his master as miraculous, begged him to give him what was left in the pigskin, which was no small quantity. Don Quixote consented, and he, taking it with both hands in good faith and with a better will, gulped down and drained off very little less than his master. But the fact is that the stomach of poor Sancho was of necessity not so delicate as that of his master, and so, before vomiting, he was seized with such gripings and retchings, and such sweats and faintings, that verily and truly he believed his last hour had come, and finding himself so racked and tormented, he cursed the balsam and the thief that had given it to him. Don Quixote, seeing him in this state, said, "It is my belief, Sancho, that this mischief comes of thy not being dubbed a knight, for I am persuaded this liquor cannot be good for those who are not so."
"If your worship knew that," returned Sancho, "woe betide me and all my kindred! Why did you let me taste it?"
At this moment the draught took effect, and the poor squire began to discharge both ways, at such a rate that the rush mat on which he had thrown himself and the canvas blanket he had covering him were fit for nothing afterwards. He sweated and perspired with such paroxysms and convulsions that not only he himself but all present thought his end had come. This tempest and tribulation lasted about 2 hours, at the end of which he was left, not like his master, but so weak and exhausted that he could not stand. Don Quixote, however, who, as has been said, felt himself relieved and well, was eager to take his departure at once in quest of adventures, as it seemed to him that all the time he loitered there was a fraud upon the world and those in it who stood in need of his help and protection, all the more when he had the security and confidence his balsam afforded him. And so, urged by this impulse, he saddled Rocinante himself, and put the pack-saddle on his squire's beast, whom, likewise, he helped to dress and mount the ass. After which he mounted his horse, and turning to a corner of the inn, he laid hold of a pike that stood there, to serve him by way of a lance. All that were in the inn, who were more than 20 persons, stood watching him. The innkeeper's daughter was likewise observing him, and he, too, never took his eyes off her, and from time to time fetched a sigh that he seemed to pluck up from the depths of his bowels. But they all thought it must be from the pain he felt in his ribs. At any rate, they who had seen him plastered the night before thought so. As soon as they were both mounted at the gate of the inn, he called to the host and said in a very grave and measured voice,
"Many and great are the favours, O guardian, that I have received in this castle of yours, and I remain under the deepest obligation to be grateful to you for them all the days of my life. If I can repay them in avenging you of any arrogant foe who may have wronged you, know that my calling is no other than to aid the weak, to avenge those who suffer wrong, and to chastise perfidy. Search your memory, and if you find anything of this kind, you need only tell me of it, and I promise you, by the order of knighthood which I have received, to procure you satisfaction and reparation to the utmost of your desire."
The innkeeper replied to him with equal calmness,
"Sir Knight, I do not want your worship to avenge me of any wrong, because when any is done me I can take what vengeance seems good to me. The only thing I want is that you pay me the score that you have run up in the inn last night, as well as for the straw and barley for your two beasts, as for supper and beds."
"Then this is an inn?" said Don Quixote.
"And a very respectable one," said the innkeeper.
"I have been under a mistake all this time," answered Don Quixote. "For in truth I thought it was a castle, and not a bad one. But since it appears that it is not a castle but an inn, all that can be done now is that you should excuse the payment, for I cannot contravene the rule of knights-errant, of whom I know as a fact, and up to the present I have read nothing to the contrary, that they never paid for lodging or anything else in the inn where they might be. For any hospitality that might be offered them is their due by law and right, in return for the insufferable toil they endure in seeking adventures by night and by day, in summer and in winter, on foot and on horseback, in hunger and thirst, cold and heat, exposed to all the inclemencies of heaven and all the hardships of earth."
"I have little to do with that," replied the innkeeper. "Pay me what you owe me, and let us have no more talk of chivalry, for all I care about is to get my money."
"You are a stupid, scurvy innkeeper,"
said Don Quixote, and putting spurs to Rocinante and bringing his pike to the slope, he rode out of the inn before anyone could stop him, and pushed on some distance without looking to see if his squire was following him. The innkeeper, when he saw him go without paying him, ran to get payment of Sancho, who said that as his master would not pay, neither would he, because, being as he was squire to a knight-errant, the same rule and reason held good for him as for his master with regard to not paying anything in inns and hostelries. At this the innkeeper waxed very wroth, and threatened, if he did not pay, to compel him in a way that he would not like, to which Sancho made answer that by the law of chivalry his master had received, he would not pay a halfpenny, though it cost him his life, for the excellent and ancient usage of knights-errant was not going to be violated by him, nor should the squires of such as were yet to come into the world ever complain of him or reproach him with breaking so just a privilege. The ill luck of the unfortunate Sancho so ordered it that among the company in the inn there were 4 wool carders from Segovia, 3 needle-makers from the Colt of Cordova, and 2 lodgers from the Fair of Seville, lively fellows, tender-hearted, fond of a joke and playful, who, almost as if instigated and moved by a common impulse, made up to Sancho and dismounted him from his ass, while one of them went in for the blanket of the host's bed. But on flinging him into it they looked up, and seeing that the ceiling was somewhat lower than what they required for their work, they decided upon going out into the yard, which was bounded by the sky, and there, putting Sancho in the middle of the blanket, they began to raise him high, making sport with him as they would with a dog at Shrovetide. The cries of the poor blanketed wretch were so loud that they reached the ears of his master, who, halting to listen attentively, was persuaded that some new adventure was coming, until he clearly perceived that it was his squire who uttered them. Wheeling about, he came up to the inn with a laborious gallop, and finding it shut went round to see if he could find some way of getting in. But as soon as he came to the wall of the yard, which was not very high, he discovered the game that was being played with his squire. He saw him rising and falling in the air with such grace and nimbleness that, had his rage allowed him, it is my belief he would have laughed. He tried to climb from his horse onto the top of the wall, but he was so bruised and battered that he could not even dismount. And so from the back of his horse he began to utter such maledictions and objurgations against those who were blanketing Sancho as it would be impossible to write down accurately. They, however, did not stay their laughter or their work for this, nor did the flying Sancho cease his lamentations, mingled now with threats, now with entreaties, but all to little purpose or none at all, until from pure weariness they left off. They then brought him his ass, and mounting him on top of it they put his jacket round him, and the compassionate Maritornes, seeing him so exhausted, thought fit to refresh him with a jug of water, and that it might be all the cooler, she fetched it from the well. Sancho took it, and as he was raising it to his mouth, he was stopped by the cries of his master, exclaiming, "Sancho, my son, drink not water, drink it not, my son, for it will kill thee. See, here I have the blessed balsam," and he held up the flask of liquor, "and with drinking 2 drops of it thou wilt certainly be restored." At these words Sancho turned his eyes asquint, and in a still louder voice said, "Can it be your worship has forgotten that I am not a knight, or do you want me to end by vomiting up what bowels I have left after last night? Keep your liquor in the name of all the devils, and leave me to myself." And at one and the same instant he left off talking and began drinking. But as at the first sup he perceived it was water, he did not care to go on with it, and begged Maritornes to fetch him some wine, which she did with right good will, and paid for it with her own money. For indeed they say of her that though she was in that line of life, there was some faint and distant resemblance to a Christian about her. When Sancho had done drinking, he dug his heels into his ass, and the gate of the inn being thrown open, he passed out very well pleased at having paid nothing and carried his point, though it had been at the expense of his usual sureties, his shoulders. It is true that the innkeeper detained his saddlebags in payment of what was owing to him, but Sancho took his departure in such a flurry that he never missed them. The innkeeper, as soon as he saw him off, wanted to bar the gate close, but the blanketers would not agree to it, for they were fellows who would not have cared 2 farthings for Don Quixote, even had he been really one of the knights-errant of the Round Table. Chapter 18. In which is related the discourse Sancho Panza held with his master Don Quixote, and other adventures worth relating. Sancho reached his master so limp and faint that he could not urge on his beast. When Don Quixote saw the state he was in, he said,
I have now come to the conclusion, good Sancho, that this castle, or inn, is beyond a doubt enchanted, because those who have so atrociously diverted themselves with thee, what can they be but phantoms or beings of another world? And I hold this confirmed by having noticed that when I was by the wall of the yard witnessing the acts of thy sad tragedy, it was out of my power to mount upon it, nor could I even dismount from Rocinante, because they no doubt had me enchanted. For I swear to thee by the faith of what I am, that if I had been able to climb up or dismount, I would have avenged thee in such a way that those braggart thieves would have remembered their freak for ever, even though in so doing I knew that I contravened the laws of chivalry, which, as I have often told thee, do not permit a knight to lay hands on him who is not one, save in case of urgent and great necessity in defence of his own life and person. I would have avenged myself too, if I could, said Sancho, whether I had been dubbed knight or not, but I could not, though for my part I am persuaded those who amused themselves with me were not phantoms or enchanted men, as your worship says, but men of flesh and bone like ourselves, and they all had their names, for I heard them name them when they were tossing me, and one was called Pedro Martinez, and another Tenorio Hernandez, and the innkeeper, I heard, was called Juan Palomec the Left-Handed. So that, senor, your not being able to leap over the wall of the yard or dismount from your horse came of something else besides enchantments. And what I make out clearly from all this is that these adventures we go seeking will in the end lead us into such misadventures that we shall know not which is our right foot, and that the best and wisest thing, according to my small wits, would be for us to return home now that it is harvest time, and attend to our business, and give over wandering from Zecca to Mecca and from pail to bucket, as the saying is.
"How little thou knowest about chivalry, Sancho," replied Don Quixote. "Hold thy peace, and have patience. The day will come when thou shalt see with thine own eyes what an honourable thing it is to wander in the pursuit of this calling. Nay, tell me, what greater pleasure can there be in the world, or what delight can equal that of winning a battle and triumphing over one's enemy? None, beyond all doubt."
"Very likely," answered Sancho, "though I do not know it. All I know is that since we have been knights-errant, or since your worship has been one, for I have no right to reckon myself one of so honourable a number, we have never won any battle except the one with the Biscayan, and even out of that your worship came with half an ear and half a helmet the less. And from that till now it has been all cudgelings and more cudgelings, cuffs and more cuffs, I getting the blanketing over and above, and falling in with enchanted persons on whom I cannot avenge myself so as to know what the delight, as your worship calls it, of conquering an enemy is like."
"That is what vexes me, and what ought to vex thee, Sancho," replied Don Quixote. "But henceforward I will endeavour to have at hand some sword made by such craft that no kind of enchantments can take effect upon him who carries it, and it is even possible that fortune may procure for me that which belonged to Amadis when he was called the Knight of the Burning Sword, which was one of the best swords that ever knight in the world possessed, for, besides having the said virtue, it cut like a razor, and there was no armour, however strong and enchanted it might be, that could resist it."
"Such is my luck," said Sancho, "that even if that happened, and your worship found some such sword, it would, like the balsam, turn out serviceable and good for dubbed knights only, and as for the squires, they might sup sorrow."
"Fear not that, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "Heaven will deal better by thee."
Thus talking, Don Quixote and his squire were going along when, on the road they were following, Don Quixote perceived approaching them a large and thick cloud of dust, on seeing which he turned to Sancho and said,
"This is the day, Sancho, on which will be seen the boon my fortune is reserving for me. This, I say, is the day on which, as much as on any other, shall be displayed the might of my arm, and on which I shall do deeds that shall remain written in the book of fame for all ages to come. Seest thou that cloud of dust which rises yonder? Well, then, all that is churned up by a vast army composed of various and countless nations that comes marching there."
"According to that, there must be two," said Sancho, "for on this opposite side also there rises just such another cloud of dust."
Don Quixote turned to look, and found that it was true, and rejoicing exceedingly, he concluded that they were two armies about to engage and encounter in the midst of that broad plain. For at all times and seasons his fancy was full of the battles, enchantments, adventures, crazy feats, loves, and defiances that are recorded in the books of chivalry, and everything he said, thought, or did had reference to such things. Now the cloud of dust he had seen was raised by two great droves of sheep coming along the same road in opposite directions, which, because of the dust, did not become visible until they drew near. But Don Quixote asserted so positively that they were armies that Sancho was led to believe it, and say,
"Well, and what are we to do, señor?"
"What?" said Don Quixote. "Give aid and assistance to the weak and those who need it. And thou must know, Sancho, that this which comes opposite to us is conducted and led by the mighty Emperor Ali Fanfaron, lord of the great Isle of Trapobana. This other that marches behind me is that of his enemy, the king of the Garamantas, Pentapolin of the bare arm, for he always goes into battle with his right arm bare."
"But why are these two lords such enemies?"
"They are at enmity," replied Don Quixote, "because this Ali Fanfaron is a furious pagan, and is in love with the daughter of Pentapolin, who is a very beautiful and moreover gracious lady, and a Christian, and her father is unwilling to bestow her upon the pagan king unless he first abandons the religion of his false prophet Mohammed and adopts his own."
"By my beard," said Sancho, "but Pentapolin does quite right, and I will help him as much as I can."
"In that thou wilt do what is thy duty, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "For to engage in battles of this sort, it is not requisite to be dubbed knight."
"That I can well understand," answered Sancho. "But where shall we put this ass, where we may be sure to find him after the fray is over? For I believe it has not been the custom so far to go into battle on a beast of this kind."
"That is true," said Don Quixote. "And what you had best do with him is to leave him to take his chance whether he be lost or not, for the horses we shall have when we come out victors will be so many that even Rocinante will run a risk of being changed for another. But attend to me and observe, for I wish to give thee some account of the chief knights who accompany these two armies, and that thou mayest the better see and mark, let us withdraw to that hillock which rises yonder, whence both armies may be seen." They did so, and placed themselves on a rising ground from which the two droves that Don Quixote made armies of might have been plainly seen if the clouds of dust they raised had not obscured them and blinded the sight. Nevertheless, seeing in his imagination what he did not see and what did not exist, he began thus in a loud voice. "That knight whom thou seest yonder in yellow armour, who bears upon his shield a lion crowned, crouching at the feet of a damsel, is the valiant Laurcalco, lord of the Silver Bridge. That one in armour with flowers of gold, who bears on his shield three crowns argent on an azure field, is the dreaded Micocolembo, Grand Duke of Quirocia. That other of gigantic frame on his right hand is the ever-dauntless Brandabarbaran de Boliche, lord of the Three Arabias, who for armour wears that serpent skin, and has for shield a gate which, according to tradition, is one of those of the temple that Samson brought to the ground when, by his death, he revenged himself upon his enemies. But turn thine eyes to the other side, and thou shalt see in front and in the van of this other army the ever-victorious and never-vanquished Timonel of Carcajona, prince of New Biscay, who comes in armour with arms quartered azure, vert, white, and yellow, and bears on his shield a cat or on a field tawny with a motto which says, Meow, which is the beginning of the name of his lady, who, according to report, is the peerless Meowlina, daughter of the Duke Alfeniquen of the Algarve. The other, who burdens and presses the loins of that powerful charger and bears arms white as snow and a shield blank and without any device, is a novice knight, a Frenchman by birth, Pierre Papin by name, lord of the baronies of Utrique. That other, who with iron-shod heels strikes the flanks of that nimble party-coloured zebra, and for arms bears azure vair, is the mighty Duke of Nerbia, Espartafilardo of the Wood, who bears for device on his shield an asparagus plant, with a motto in Castilian that says, Rastrea mi suerte, thus trails my luck. And so he went on, naming a number of knights of one squadron or the other out of his imagination, and to all he assigned offhand their arms, colours, devices, and mottoes, carried away by the illusions of his strange imagination. And without pause he continued, "People of diverse nations compose this squadron in front. Here are those that drink of the sweet waters of the famous Xanthus, those that scour the woody Massilian plains, those that sift the pure fine gold of Arabia Felix, those that enjoy the famed cool banks of the crystal Thermodon, those that in many and various ways divert the streams of the golden Pactolus, the Numidians, faithless in their promises, the Persians, renowned in archery, the Parthians and the Medes that fight as they fly, the Arabs that ever shift their dwellings, the Scythians as cruel as they are fair, the Ethiopians with pierced lips, and an infinity of other nations whose features I recognize and describe, though I cannot recall their names. In this other squadron there come those that drink of the crystal streams of the olive-bearing Betis, those that make smooth their countenances with the water of the ever-rich and golden Tagus, those that rejoice in the fertilizing flow of the divine Genil, those that roam the Tartesian plains abounding in pasture, those that take their pleasure in the Elysian meadows of Hereth, the rich Manchegans, crowned with ruddy ears of corn, the wearers of iron, old relics of the Gothic race, those that bathe in the Pisuerga, renowned for its gentle current, those that feed their herds along the spreading pastures of the winding Guadiana, famed for its hidden course, those that tremble with the cold of the pine-clad Pyrenees, or the dazzling snows of the lofty Apennine, in a word, as many as all Europe includes and contains. Good God! What a number of countries and nations he named, giving to each its proper attributes with marvellous readiness, brimful and saturated with what he had read in his lying books. Sancho Panza hung upon his words without speaking, and from time to time turned to try if he could see the knights and giants his master was describing, and as he could not make out one of them, he said to him,
"Señor, devil take it, if there's a sign of any man you talk of, knight or giant, in the whole thing. Maybe it's all enchantment, like the phantoms last night."
"How canst thou say that?" answered Don Quixote. "Dost thou not hear the neighing of the steeds, the braying of the trumpets, the roll of the drums?"
"I hear nothing but a great bleating of ewes and sheep," said Sancho, which was true, for by this time the two flocks had come close.
"The fear thou art in, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "prevents thee from seeing or hearing correctly. For one of the effects of fear is to derange the senses and make things appear different from what they are. If thou art in such fear, withdraw to one side and leave me to myself, for alone I suffice to bring victory to that side to which I shall give my aid."
And so saying, he gave Rocinante the spur, and putting the lance in rest, shot down the slope like a thunderbolt. Sancho shouted after him, crying,
"Come back, Señor Don Quixote! I vow to God they are sheep and ewes you are charging! Come back! Oh, unlucky the father that begot me! What madness is this? Look, there is no giant, nor knight, nor cats, nor arms, nor shields quartered or whole, nor vair azure or bedeviled. What are you about, sinner that I am before God?"
But not for all these entreaties did Don Quixote turn back. On the contrary, he went on, shouting out,
"Ho, knights, ye who follow and fight under the banners of the valiant Emperor Pentapolene of the Bare Arm, follow me all. Ye shall see how easily I shall give him his revenge over his enemy, Ali Fanfaron of the Trapabana."
So saying, he dashed into the midst of the squadron of ewes, and began spearing them with as much spirit and intrepidity as if he were transfixing mortal enemies in earnest. The shepherds and drovers accompanying the flock shouted to him to desist. Seeing it was no use, they ungirt their slings and began to salute his ears with stones as big as one's fist. Don Quixote gave no heed to the stones, but, letting drive right and left, kept saying, "Where art thou, proud Alifanfaron? Come before me. I am a single knight who would fain prove thy prowess hand to hand, and make thee yield thy life a penalty for the wrong thou dost to the valiant Pentapolin Garamanta." Here came a stone from the brook that struck him on the side and buried a couple of ribs in his body. Feeling himself so smitten, he imagined himself slain or badly wounded for certain, and recollecting his liquor, he drew out his flask, and putting it to his mouth began to pour the contents into his stomach. But ere he had succeeded in swallowing what seemed to him enough, there came another pebble, which struck him on the hand and on the flask so fairly that it smashed it to pieces, knocking 3 or 4 teeth out of his mouth in its course, and sorely crushing 2 fingers of his hand. Such was the force of the first blow and of the second, that the poor knight, in spite of himself, came down backwards off his horse. The shepherds came up, and felt sure they had killed him. So in all haste they collected their flock together, took up the dead beasts, of which there were more than 7, and made off without waiting to ascertain anything further. All this time Sancho stood on the hill watching the crazy feats his master was performing, and tearing his beard and cursing the hour and the occasion when fortune had made him acquainted with him. Seeing him then brought to the ground, and that the shepherds had taken themselves off, he ran to him, and found him in a very bad case, though not unconscious, and said he, "Did I not tell you to come back, Señor Don Quixote, and that what you were going to attack were not armies but droves of sheep?" "That's how that thief of a sage, my enemy, can alter and falsify things," answered Don Quixote. "Thou must know, Sancho, that it is a very easy matter for those of his sort to make us believe what they choose, and this malignant being who persecutes me, envious of the glory he knew I was to win in this battle, has turned the squadrons of the enemy into droves of sheep. At any rate, do this much, I beg of thee, Sancho, to undeceive thyself, and see that what I say is true. Mount thy ass and follow them quietly, and thou shalt see that when they have gone some little distance from this, they will return to their original shape, and ceasing to be sheep, become men in all respects as I described them to thee at first. But go not just yet, for I want thy help and assistance. Come hither, and see how many of my teeth and grinders are missing, for I feel as if there was not one left in my mouth." Sancho came so close that he almost put his eyes into his mouth. Now, just at that moment the balsam had acted on the stomach of Don Quixote, so, at the very instant when Sancho came to examine his mouth, he discharged all its contents with more force than a musket, and full into the beard of the compassionate squire.
"Holy Mary!" cried Sancho. "What is this that has happened me? Clearly this sinner is mortally wounded as he vomits blood from the mouth."
But considering the matter a little more closely, he perceived by the colour, taste, and smell that it was not blood but the balsam from the flask which he had seen him drink, and he was taken with such a loathing that his stomach turned, and he vomited up his inside over his very master, and both were left in a precious state. Sancho ran to his ass to get something wherewith to clean himself and relieve his master out of his saddlebags. But not finding them, he well nigh took leave of his senses, and cursed himself anew, and in his heart resolved to quit his master and return home, even though he forfeited the wages of his service and all hopes of the promised island. Don Quixote now rose, and putting his left hand to his mouth to keep his teeth from falling out altogether, with the other he laid hold of the bridle of Rocinante, who had never stirred from his master's side, so loyal and well-behaved was he, and betook himself to where the squire stood leaning over his ass with his hand to his cheek, like one in deep dejection. Seeing him in this mood, looking so sad, Don Quixote said to him, "Bear in mind, Sancho, that one man is no more than another, unless he does more than another. All these tempests that fall upon us are signs that fair weather is coming shortly, and that things will go well with us, for it is impossible for good or evil to last for ever. And hence it follows that the evil having lasted long, the good must be now nigh at hand. So thou must not distress thyself at the misfortunes which happen to me, since thou hast no share in them."
"How have I not?" replied Sancho. "Was he whom they blanketed yesterday, perchance, any other than my father's son? And the saddlebags that are missing today, with all my treasures, did they belong to any other but myself?"
"What? Are the saddlebags missing, Sancho?" said Don Quixote.
"Yes, they are missing," answered Sancho.
"In that case we have nothing to eat today," replied Don Quixote.
"It would be so," answered Sancho, "if there were none of the herbs your worship says you know in these meadows, those with which knights errant as unlucky as your worship are wont to supply such like shortcomings."
"For all that," answered Don Quixote, "I would rather have just now a quarter of bread or a loaf and a couple of pilchards' heads than all the herbs described by Dioscorides, even with Dr. Laguna's notes. Nevertheless, Sancho the Good, mount thy beast and come along with me, for God, who provides for all things, will not fail us, more especially when we are so active in his service as we are, since he fails not the midges of the air, nor the grubs of the earth, nor the tadpoles of the water, and is so merciful that he maketh his sun to rise on the good and on the evil, and sendeth rain on the unjust and on the just."
"Your worship would make a better preacher than knight-errant," said Sancho.
"Knights errant knew and ought to know everything, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "For there were knights errant in former times as well qualified to deliver a sermon or discourse in the middle of an encampment as if they had graduated in the University of Paris, whereby we may see that the lance has never blunted the pen, nor the pen the lance."
"Well, be it as your worship says," replied Sancho. "Let us be off now and find some place of shelter for the night, and God grant it may be somewhere where there are no blankets, nor blanketeers, nor phantoms, nor enchanted moors. For if there are, may the devil take the whole concern."
"Ask that of God, my son," said Don Quixote, "and do thou lead on where thou wilt. For this time I leave our lodging to thy choice. But reach me here thy hand, and feel with thy finger, and find out how many of my teeth are missing from this right side of the upper jaw, for it is there I feel the pain." Sancho put in his fingers, and feeling about, asked him, "How many grinders used your worship to have on this side?"
"Four," replied Don Quixote, "besides the back tooth, all whole and quite sound."
"Mind what you are saying, senor."
"I say four, if not five," answered Don Quixote. "For never in my life have I had tooth or grinder drawn, nor has any fallen out or been destroyed by any decay or rheum."
"Well, then," said Sancho, "in this lower side your worship has no more than two grinders and a half, and in the upper neither a half nor any at all, for it is all as smooth as the palm of my hand."
"Luckless that I am," said Don Quixote, hearing the sad news his squire gave him. "I had rather they despoiled me of an arm, so it were not the sword-arm. For I tell thee, Sancho, a mouth without teeth is like a mill without a millstone, and a tooth is much more to be prized than a diamond. But we who profess the austere order of chivalry are liable to all this. Mount, friend, and lead the way, and I will follow thee at whatever pace thou wilt."
Sancho did as he bade him, and proceeded in the direction in which he thought he might find refuge without quitting the high road, which was there very much frequented. As they went along, then, at a slow pace, for the pain in Don Quixote's jaws kept him uneasy and ill-disposed for speed, Sancho thought it well to amuse and divert him by talk of some kind, and among the things he said to him was that which will be told in the following chapter. Chapter 19 Of the shrewd discourse which Sancho held with his master, and of the adventure that befell him with a dead body, together with other notable occurrences. "It seems to me, senor, that all these mishaps that have befallen us of late have been without any doubt a punishment for the offence committed by your worship against the order of chivalry in not keeping the oath you made not to eat bread off a tablecloth or embrace the queen, and all the rest of it that your worship swore to observe until you had taken that helmet of Malandrino's, or whatever the Moor is called, for I do not very well remember."
"Thou art very right, Sancho," said Don Quixote,
"but to tell the truth, it had escaped my memory. And likewise thou mayest rely upon it that the affair of the blanket happened to thee because of thy fault in not reminding me of it in time.
But I will make amends, for there are ways of compounding for everything in the order of chivalry.
"Why, have I taken an oath of some sort, then?" said Sancho.
"It makes no matter that thou hast not taken an oath," said Don Quixote. "Suffice it that I see thou art not quite clear of complicity, and whether or no, it will not be ill done to provide ourselves with a remedy."
"In that case," said Sancho, "mind that your worship does not forget this as you did the oath. Perhaps the phantoms may take it into their heads to amuse themselves once more with me, or even with your worship, if they see you so obstinate."
While engaged in this and other talk, night overtook them on the road before they had reached or discovered any place of shelter, and what made it still worse was that they were dying of hunger, for with the loss of the saddlebags they had lost their entire larder. And to complete the misfortune, they met with an adventure which without any invention had really the appearance of one. It so happened that the night closed in somewhat darkly, but for all that they pushed on, Sancho feeling sure that, as the road was the king's highway, they might reasonably expect to find some inn within a league or two. Going along, then, in this way, the night dark, the squire hungry, the master too sharp set, they saw coming towards them on the road they were travelling a great number of lights, which looked exactly like stars in motion. Sancho was taken aback at the sight of them, nor did Don Quixote altogether relish them. The one pulled up his ass by the halter, the other his hack by the bridle, and they stood still, watching anxiously to see what all this would turn out to be, and found that the lights were approaching them, and the nearer they came the greater they seemed, at which spectacle Sancho began to shake like a man dosed with mercury, and Don Quixote's hair stood on end. He, however, plucking up spirit a little, said, "This, no doubt, Sancho, will be a most mighty and perilous adventure, in which it will be needful for me to put forth all my valour and resolution."
"Unlucky me!" answered Sancho. "If this adventure happens to be one of phantoms, as I am beginning to think it is, where shall I find the ribs to bear it?"
"Be they phantoms ever so much," said Don Quixote, "I will not permit them to touch a thread of thy garments. For if they played tricks with thee the time before, it was because I was unable to leap the walls of the yard. But now we are on a wide plain, where I shall be able to wield my sword as I please."
"And if they enchant and cripple you as they did the last time," said Sancho, "what difference will it make being on the open plain or not?"
"For all that," replied Don Quixote, "I entreat thee, Sancho, to keep a good heart, for experience will tell thee what mine is."
"I will. Please God," answered Sancho, and the two retiring to one side of the road set themselves to observe closely what all these moving lights might be. And very soon afterwards they made out some 20 people draped in white, all on horseback, with lighted torches in their hands, the awe-inspiring aspect of whom completely extinguished the courage of Sancho, who began to chatter with his teeth like one in the cold fit of an ague. And his heart sank and his teeth chattered still more when they perceived distinctly that behind them there came a litter covered over with black, and followed by 6 more mounted figures in mourning down to the very feet of their mules, for they could perceive plainly they were not horses by the easy pace at which they went. And as the white-draped figures came along, they muttered to themselves in a low, plaintive tone. This strange spectacle at such an hour and in such a solitary place was quite enough to strike terror into Sancho's heart, and even into his master's, and, save in Don Quixote's case, did so, for all Sancho's resolution had now broken down. It was just the opposite with his master, whose imagination immediately conjured up all this to him vividly as one of the adventures of his books. He took it into his head that the litter was a bier, on which was borne some sorely wounded or slain knight, to avenge whom was a task reserved for him alone, and without any further reasoning he laid his lance in rest, fixed himself firmly in his saddle, and with gallant spirit and bearing took up his position in the middle of the road, where the white-robed ones must of necessity pass. And as soon as he saw them near at hand, he raised his voice and said, "Halt, knights, or whosoever ye may be, and render me account of who ye are, whence ye come, where ye go, what it is ye carry upon that bier, for, to judge by appearances, either ye have done some wrong, or some wrong has been done to you, and it is fitting and necessary that I should know.
either that I may chastise you for the evil ye have done, or else that I may avenge you for the injury that has been inflicted upon you."
"We are in haste," answered one of those in white, "and the inn is far off, and we cannot stop to render you such an account as you demand." And spurring his mule, he moved on. Don Quixote was mightily provoked by this answer, and seizing the mule by the bridle, he said, "Halt, and be more mannerly, and render an account of what I have asked of you, else take my defiance to combat, all of you."
The mule was shy, and was so frightened at her bridle being seized, that rearing up, she flung her rider to the ground over her haunches. An attendant, who was on foot, seeing the man in white fall, began to abuse Don Quixote, who now, moved to anger, without any more ado, laying his lance in rest, charged one of the men in mourning and brought him badly wounded to the ground, and as he wheeled round upon the others, the agility with which he attacked and routed them was a sight to see, for it seemed just as if wings had that instant grown upon Rocinante, so lightly and proudly did he bear himself. The white-robed ones were all timid folk and unarmed, so they speedily made their escape from the fray, and set off at a run across the plain with their lighted torches, looking exactly like maskers running on some gala or festival night. The mourners, too, enveloped and swathed in their skirts and gowns, were unable to bestir themselves, and so, with entire safety to himself, Don Quixote belaboured them all and drove them off against their will, for they all thought it was no man but a devil from hell come to carry away the dead body they had in the litter. Sancho beheld all this in astonishment at the intrepidity of his lord, and said to himself, "Clearly, this master of mine is as bold and valiant as he says he is." A burning torch lay on the ground near the first man whom the mule had thrown, by the light of which Don Quixote perceived him. And coming up to him, he presented the point of the lance to his face, calling on him to yield himself prisoner, or else he would kill him. To which the prostrate man replied, "I am prisoner enough as it is. I cannot stir, for one of my legs is broken. I entreat you, if you be a Christian gentleman, not to kill me, which will be committing grave sacrilege, for I am a master of art studying holy orders."
"Then what the devil brought you here, being a churchman?" said Don Quixote.
"What, senor?" said the other. "My bad luck."
"Then still worse awaits you," said Don Quixote, "if you do not satisfy me as to all I asked you at first."
"You shall soon be satisfied," said the master of arts. "You must know, then, that though just now I said I was a master of arts, I am only a bachelor, and my name is Alonso Lopez. I am a native of Alcobendas. I come from the city of Baeza with 11 others, priests, the same who fled with the torches, and we are going to the city of Segovia accompanying a dead body which is in that litter, and is that of a gentleman who died in Baeza, where he was interred. And now, as I said, we are taking his bones to their burial place, which is in Segovia, where he was born."
"And who killed him?" asked Don Quixote.
"God, by means of a malignant fever that took him," answered the bachelor.
"In that case," said Don Quixote, "the Lord has relieved me of the task of avenging his death, had any other slain him. But he who slew him having slain him, there is nothing for it but to be silent, and shrug one's shoulders. I should do the same were he to slay myself, and I would have your reverence know that I am a knight of La Mancha, Don Quixote by name, and it is my business and calling to roam the world, righting wrongs and redressing injuries."
"I do not know how that about righting wrongs can be," said the bachelor, "for from straight you have made me crooked, leaving me with a broken leg that will never see itself straight again all the days of its life. And the injury you have redressed in my case has been to leave me injured in such a way that I shall remain injured for ever. And the height of misadventure it was to fall in with you who go in search of adventures."
"Things do not all happen in the same way," answered Don Quixote. "It all came, Sir Bachelor Alonso Lopez, of your going, as you did, by night, dressed in those surplices, with lighted torches, praying, covered with mourning, so that naturally you looked like something evil and of the other world. And so I could not avoid doing my duty in attacking you, and I should have attacked you even had I known positively that you were the very devils of hell, for such I certainly believed and took you to be."
"As my fate has so willed it,"
said the bachelor. "I entreat you, Sir Knight-errant, whose errand has been such an evil one for me, to help me to get up from under this mule that holds one of my legs caught between the stirrup and the saddle." "I would have talked on till tomorrow," said Don Quixote. "How long were you going to wait before telling me of your distress?" He at once called to Sancho, who, however, had no mind to come, as he was just then engaged in unloading one of the mules, well laden with provender, which these worthy gentlemen had brought with them. Sancho made a bag of his coat, and getting together as much as he could, and as the bag would hold, he loaded his beast, and then hastened to obey his master's call, and helped him to remove the bachelor from under the mule. Then, putting him on her back, he gave him the torch, and Don Quixote bade him follow the track of his companions, and beg pardon of them on his part for the wrong which he could not help doing them. And said Sancho, "If by any chance these gentlemen should want to know who was the hero that served them so, your worship may tell them that he is the famous Don Quixote of La Mancha, otherwise called the Knight of the Rueful Countenance." The bachelor then took his departure. I forgot to mention that before he did so, he said to Don Quixote, "Remember that you stand excommunicated for having laid violent hands on a holy thing. Juxta illud si quis suadente diabolo." "I do not understand that Latin," answered Don Quixote, "but I know well I did not lay hands, only this pike. Besides, I did not think I was committing an assault upon priests or things of the church, which, like a Catholic and faithful Christian as I am, I respect and revere, but upon phantoms and spectres of the other world. But even so, I remember how it fared with Cid Ruy Diaz when he broke the chair of the ambassador of that king before His Holiness the Pope, who excommunicated him for the same. And yet the good Roderick of Vivar bore himself that day like a very noble and valiant knight." On hearing this, the bachelor took his departure, as has been said, without making any reply, and Don Quixote asked Sancho what had induced him to call him the Knight of the Rueful Countenance more then than at any other time. "I will tell you," answered Sancho. "It was because I have been looking at you for some time by the light of the torch held by that unfortunate, and verily your worship has got of late the most ill-favoured countenance I ever saw. It must be either owing to fatigue of this combat, or else to the want of teeth." "It is not that," replied Don Quixote, "but because the sage whose duty it will be to write the history of my achievements must have thought it proper that I should take some distinctive name, as all knights of yore did, one being the Knight of the Burning Sword, another the Knight of the Unicorn, this one the Knight of the Damsels, that the Knight of the Phoenix, another the Knight of the Griffin, and another the Knight of the Death. And by these names and designations they were known all the world round. And so I say that the sage aforesaid must have put it into your mouth and mind just now to call me the Knight of the Rueful Countenance, as I intend to call myself from this day forward. And that the said name may fit me better, I mean, when the opportunity offers, to have a very rueful countenance painted on my shield." "There is no occasion, senor, for wasting time or money on making that countenance," said Sancho, "for all that need be done is for your worship to show your own face to face to those who look at you, and without anything more, either image or shield, they will call you the Knight of the Rueful Countenance. And believe me, I am telling you the truth, for I assure you, senor, and in good part be it said, hunger and the loss of your grinders have given you such an ill-favoured face that, as I say, the rueful picture may be very well spared." Don Quixote laughed at Sancho's pleasantry. Nevertheless, he resolved to call himself by that name and have his shield painted as he had devised. Don Quixote would have looked to see whether the body in the litter were bones or not, but Sancho would not have it, saying, "Señor, you have ended this perilous adventure more safely for yourself than any of those I have seen. Perhaps these people, though beaten and routed, may bethink themselves that it is a single man that has beaten them, and, feeling sore and ashamed of it, may take heart and come in search of us and give us trouble enough. The ass is in proper trim, the mountains are near at hand, hunger presses, we have nothing more to do but make good our retreat, and, as the saying is, the dead to the grave and the living to the loaf." And driving his ass before him, he begged his master to follow, who, feeling that Sancho was right, did so without replying.
and after proceeding some little distance between two hills, they found themselves in a wide and retired valley, where they alighted, and Sancho unloaded his beast, and stretched upon the green grass, with hunger for sauce, they breakfasted, dined, lunched, and supped all at once, satisfying their appetites with more than one store of cold meat, which the dead man's clerical gentlemen, who seldom put themselves on short allowance, had brought with them on their mule. But another piece of ill luck befell them, which Sancho held the worst of all, and that was that they had no wine to drink, nor even water to moisten their lips. And as thirst tormented them, Sancho, observing that the meadow where they were was full of green and tender grass, said what will be told in the following chapter. Chapter 20 Of the unexampled and unheard-of adventure which was achieved by the valiant Don Quixote of La Mancha, with less peril than any ever achieved by any famous knight in the world. It cannot be, senor, but that this grass is a proof that there must be hard by some spring or brook to give it moisture, so it would be well to move a little farther on, that we may find some place where we may quench this terrible thirst that plagues us, which beyond a doubt is more distressing than hunger. The advice seemed good to Don Quixote, and he, leading Rocinante by the bridle, and Sancho the ass by the halter, after he had packed away upon him the remains of the supper, they advanced the meadow, feeling their way, for the darkness of the night made it impossible to see anything. But they had not gone 200 paces when a loud noise of water, as if falling from great rocks, struck their ears. The sound cheered them greatly, but halting to make out by listening from what quarter it came, they heard unseasonably another noise which spoiled the satisfaction the sound of the water gave them, especially for Sancho, who was by nature timid and faint-hearted. They heard, I say, strokes falling with a measured beat, and a certain rattling of iron and chains that, together with the furious din of the water, would have struck terror into any heart but Don Quixote's. The night was, as has been said, dark, and they had happened to reach a spot in among some tall trees whose leaves, stirred by a gentle breeze, made a low, ominous sound. So that, what with the solitude, the place, the darkness, noise of the water and the rustling of the leaves, everything inspired awe and dread. More especially as they perceived that the strokes did not cease, nor the wind lull, nor morning approach, to all which might be added their ignorance as to where they were. But Don Quixote, supported by his intrepid heart, leapt on Rocinante, and bracing his shield on his arm, brought his pike to the slope, and said, "Friend Sancho, know that I, by heaven's will, have been born in this our iron age, to revive in it the age of gold, or the golden, as it is called. I am he for whom perils, mighty achievements, and valiant deeds are reserved. I am, I say again, he who is to revive the knights of the Round Table, the 12 of France, and the 9 worthies, and he who is to consign to oblivion the Platiers, the Tablantes, the Olivantes, and Tirantes, the Phoebuses and Belianises, with the whole herd of famous knights-errant of days gone by, performing in these in which I live such exploits, marvels, and feats of arms as shall obscure their brightest deeds. Thou dost mark well, faithful and trusty squire, the gloom of this night, its strange silence, the dull, confused murmur of those trees, the awful sound of that water, in quest of which we came, that seems as though it were precipitating and dashing itself down from the lofty mountains of the moon, and that incessant hammering that wounds and pains our ears, which things all together and each of itself are enough to instill fear, dread, and dismay into the breast of Mars himself, much more into one not used to hazards and adventures of the kind. Well then, all this that I put before thee is but an incentive and stimulant to my spirit, making my heart burst in my bosom through eagerness to engage in this adventure, arduous as it promises to be. Therefore tighten Rocinante's girths a little, and God be with thee. Wait for me here 3 days and no more, and if in that time I come not back, thou canst return to our village, and thence, to do me a favour and a service, thou wilt go to El Toboso, where thou shalt say to my incomparable lady Dulcinea that her captive knight hath died in attempting things that might make him worthy of being called hers. When Sancho heard his master's words, he began to weep in the most pathetic way, saying,
"Señor, I know not why your worship wants to attempt this so dreadful adventure. It is night now. No one sees us here. We can easily turn about and take ourselves out of danger, even if we don't drink for 3 days to come. And as there is no one to see us, all the less will there be anyone to set us down as cowards. Besides, I have many a time heard the curate of our village, whom your worship knows well, preach that he who seeks danger perishes in it, so it is not right to tempt God by trying so tremendous a feat from which there can be no escape save by a miracle, and heaven has performed enough of them for your worship in delivering you from being blanketed as I was, and bringing you out victorious and safe and sound from among all those enemies that were with the dead man. And if all this does not move or soften that hard heart, let this thought